Welcome to Unyielded, thriving no matter what. In a world of constant change and challenges, it can seem hard to keep up, no matter how hard we run. Yet we all know those people who seem to handle everything with grace and grit. Seemingly, nothing throws them off their game. They are engaged in what matters most to them, they are achieving the success they desire. In other words, they are creating the life they love to live, no matter what challenges and surprises show up. We call them Unyielded. My name is Bobby Kaler, and I'm your host, and I'm so excited to be on this journey with you. I mentioned that it's a journey, and you might find yourself anywhere along that path. You may be starting out, you may be mid-career, or considering your next career. You could be an entrepreneur, a salesperson, or you may be that person who just feels like something else is calling to you, and it's time for a change. My mission is to provide stories that inspire us so that when a surprise shows up and threatens to derail us, we will choose to persist. I will also provide practical skills, perspectives, and ideas that will help us create the habits of thriving and flourishing. Because at the end of the day, it is all about providing hope, knowledge, and assurance that we can all be more fulfilled and successful if we choose. Let's get right to today's episode. I'm so excited to introduce this week's guest. I was actually lucky enough to coach her back in 2018. At that time, she was a senior HR leader at a global Fortune 500 company, and she was, on all accounts, very successful. Yet she knew that some things just were not quite aligned for her. Over the course of our work together, and more importantly, the hard work that she put into her journey, she could hear the voice that had been telling her that something needed to change in order for her to live the life that she really wanted. She took the bold decision to leave her job and spend some time focused on areas that had been slowly neglected over time, like friends and family. She slowed down for the first time in her adult life, and with some time and space, she found the next right step for her, which was to pursue a dream of becoming a coach. After grad school, she has begun living her dream as an executive coach for leaders around the world and a clarity coach with individuals looking for their own next right step. Her name is Allison Napier, and I'm so excited for you to meet her. Well, Allison, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks, Bobby. It's nice to be here.
I know a little bit about your journey, but do you want to share with us, you know, what you do and your journey to that point, I guess?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm lucky to say that I'm an executive coach, helping all sorts of people find forward momentum towards where they want to go. And my journey actually starts with coaching myself. So I'll go back quite a few years to early 20s when I woke up and I was a customs officer in Canada. And I was really unhappy with where I was.
Only I didn't know that part.
Yeah. Only because it wasn't where I had planned to be. So I had hoped to go into grad school and was never successful. And customs was a means to pay for grad school. And so I woke up and, you know, I couldn't figure this out. And I was lucky enough to be introduced to an executive coach who had a focus on clarity. So after working with her for 6 months, I realized that with my extensive job experience up to that point, my strengths and my preferences, that a career in HR would be a good choice for me. So I was fortunate to, after some time, get on with a wonderful company called Schneider Electric and began my formal career in HR. After a few years, it was a really good fit. So I had an accelerated path and I found myself pregnant and taking a rather large promotion. And so that was the second time that I decided to work with an executive coach because I was going through major changes, pretty overwhelmed, and it made a huge impact on me. Fast forward a few more years, another promotion, another unusual circumstance. I enlisted another coach to help me through that leadership journey. And then a few more years later is when I met you, Bobby. And at that phase of life, I had found myself, I found myself in a pretty painful situation. So I was at a job that I loved at a company that was, you know, really good to me. And I knew I was fortunate to have, but I was really struggling. So I was constantly overwhelmed. I realize now looking back, this is about 3 years ago, I was very much approaching burnout and I wasn't sleeping. I had no healthy habits whatsoever. Things were really struggling at home with my children. So my children are now older and getting into things like activities. And I just felt stuck. And so once again, I went to my employer and said, I think I need some help because everything I'm trying, it's not working. And I really focused on the work, but there was one particular instance. I remember going on holidays with my family in this beautiful place called Tofino, which is on the west coast of Canada. And it was the first time I was really taking a break. And of course, a work issue hit. And so while I was sitting on the ground of this log cabin watching my family go out to surf, and I thought to myself, like, this isn't the way. And in many cases, you know, I realized in many ways I had placed myself in that situation by taking on too much, etc. Mm-hmm. And so I started working with you, very fortunately. And through that process, you know, the focus was really more the work burnout. And so over the period of 6 months, you know, you guided me to really look at, you know, what was causing it, what were underlying potentially limiting beliefs that I had that were leading to it. Cause I had created some of that situation as well.
We all do.
Take some ownership there. Yeah. And, you know, peeling back those bigger things and building in balance and building in healthier boundaries with work and sharing ownership with other people and helping my team members step up, et cetera. And I think it was in my last session with you when we were celebrating wins and talking about all the progress. And I think I remember saying to you, I think you said something like, well, what else, Allison? And I was like, I think I need to quit my job.
It's like, oh.
Yeah. So there was this, you know, there was so much going on prior to that I couldn't really hear something deep inside me that was saying, you know, something fundamental really needed to change. Because even with these improvements, I still wasn't fully in line with who I wanted to be and what I wanted to do. And it was really scary in many ways, but in working through it and you helping me to own it, you know, had you told me, hey, you need to quit your job, it wouldn't have resonated. I needed to come to that conclusion myself. And so I sat on that decision for at least 2 months because I knew it was such a big one. And then I just knew. And as I started to share my thoughts with the people who knew me and loved me, you know, their reaction was so positively supportive of it. They'd all seen it. And so I wanted to give my employers some time. And so I gave 3 months notice. And then in January of 2019, I left.
Wow.
Yeah.
Doesn't seem like it's been that long ago. But
I know.
That's a while.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And you said a few things in there that I loved how you put that. So much going on that you couldn't hear inside.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a pretty, I don't want to say a common place for people to get to.
Yeah.
But I think they do. One of my guests, he's a good friend of mine. His name's Doug. He was saying that God is always talking to us. It's just so many times we're so busy that we don't hear it. Mm-hmm. You know, because, and if it's God or if it's our internal voice, whatever that is, it's trying to talk to us.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I think in my case, it was very much the busy factor. So there was always a million things to do. So there was no time to really listen. And it was scary to consider a different path. That's a scary feeling to say, okay, I've been on this path for a long time and now it's time to find a new one.
Yeah, it is scary. So, and I know you found, now you're doing coaching as well, which I love because the world needs as many good coaches as it can get. So it is scary to consider a different path. How did you find the courage to do it?
So that's a good question. So I'm a pretty practical person. And so I should preface it by saying that, you know, because of, you know, good decisions along the way and a lot of financial, you know, not stability, but frugality, I guess, options were available to me. So, there was some pluses there that I don't take for granted. But in terms of the courage, I think what became obvious to me was the cost of not changing was too great. So there were other instances where I remember being in a family counselor appointment, and everything this is just a practice we do as a family, my husband and I. And I remember a counselor saying, you know, I really think that your child would stop all this attention seeking behavior if you had more time with them. Do you think you could find 30 minutes a day? And in that moment, I knew I couldn't because of all the things we had. And it was so painful, and I filled with tears because I knew I couldn't with what we had. And I didn't want that anymore. And there were other instances where I saw pictures of myself and I looked unhealthy because I wasn't sleeping and I wasn't doing, I wasn't taking care of myself. So I could see that the cost was really high of not changing.
Yeah. I love how you put that. Well, I don't love how you put it because it's kind of painful, but that, you know, the cost of not changing was just too much, you know?
And I did have support once I made myself open to seeing it. So that was another change, was accepting help from other people. So whether it was, you know, obviously I had a coach, I had colleagues that cared a lot about me, I had family and friends. That again, I think I was so busy trying to hold it all together, I really didn't let in the support that really helped me.
Yeah. You know, that's a theme that I've heard on quite a few of the episodes when people have talked about it. You know, not letting in the support because we're trying so hard to hold it together,
right?
Whether that's for ourselves or for our family, whatever. And one other thing I wanted to ask you about too is earlier you said, looking back, it was easy to see that you were approaching burnout.
Yeah.
What? Because that is something, I mean, it's all over the media here in the States that the burnout, you know, I read this article today that 40% of the people right now in the US are considering quitting their jobs and getting on a new career path. That's stunning to me. In hindsight, what were some of those signals about the burnout?
Yeah, it's a very good question. I would agree. I think with COVID as well, with all of us, many of us working from home, it's really easy to just never turn off work. So it is high risk.
It is.
So some signs for me certainly was, you know, lack of sleep. I honestly felt like my heart was racing all the time. There were just the constant thoughts. I felt like I couldn't turn my thoughts off. So the constant to-do list, whether it was work or kids or home. And I think almost like a fuzziness of thought. So when problems happened and I was in a role where, you know, I was a contact point for problems, so you need to be responsive, I almost felt like I felt as though my plate was full and I was like, you can't put anything else on it.
You
feel sick every time a problem comes because I don't have any more room was sort of the thought. So
No more capacity, no more margin. Yeah, it gets to a place where you're like, I just, one more thing, and it can be a small thing, but one more thing, and I just can't, I can't take it, you know? So very good. And now I know when we were emailing before, you had said something that was important to you was, and I'm reading my notes to see if I can get it right. The journey to find what is right for you as a whole person. Is that part of your work now that as a coach?
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess I didn't tell the other part of my story, which was after I left work. So I left with the intention of taking, you know, maybe a year off and then figure out the next plan. And almost immediately people wanted some support on a consulting perspective, which I kept very minimal. But suddenly I was feeling busy again. And I thought to myself, I heard the same voice saying, is this even what you want to be doing? And it was clear. And the answer was like, no, long term, I'm just getting busy again. And I had always wanted to do executive coaching since my first experience in my 20s, because the huge impact it had on me. I wanted to be able to help people in that way. And so along, I had taken opportunities to try and learn. And the other thing, maybe on that journey of the whole person, was just because I did my last job very well, doesn't mean that's what I should be doing. And so, you know, I have I have a strong ability to maintain a high capacity of things, and I'm very organized, and I'm able to do a number of things. But that didn't mean it was the right thing for me, just because I had honed those skills. So coming back to that whole person was really, you know, I wanted to figure out a way to bring, help others find meaning in their lives, find forward momentum towards where they wanted to go, like really make meaningful change in their lives. So knowing that, I did go back to school, I did my executive coaching training, et cetera. I also, through that training, I was coached a lot again. And oh, yeah. So, you know, I did a re-examination of my values. And because those can change, right? And how they show up. So focusing on those values, focusing on a vision for where I would like to go personally or as a family. And I think a powerful thing for me, if I think about lessons that I've learned along the way and that I really like to share with people, is that ability of setting these lofty goals and living in a space of possibility. So I wish I had an elastic band. I don't, but I think you can see my fingers. Yep. You've probably heard this before. So if you imagine there's an elastic band between your fingers, and the top finger is, you know, your vision, your dreams of where you want to go, and your bottom finger is where you are today. So if there's an elastic band, if they're far apart, there's a lot of tension there. So you could pull it and it'd be really tense. And there's two ways to drop that tension. You can either drop your goal down to where you are, or you can sit in the tension and wait for it to pull you up. And I think for me, I had a habit of probably dropping that lofty goal. Well, to a point, certainly when I was at burnout, because I couldn't imagine doing more.
No more tension.
So I think, you know, when I left work, I had some lows of fear of like, have I just stepped off the highway that was my career and no one's ever going to let me on again? Or what if I've blown everything up? And what if it, you know, this is a big mistake? And I challenged myself to sit in the tension and figure it out, like rather than just get busy again and take on what came at me. I wanted to sit in the tension to figure out what that goal was and let it pull me up, even if it took a little bit longer to get there.
Okay. Yeah. I love that. I love that word picture that I adore that. And it begs a question from my standpoint, because I'm one of these people, like I love William Bridges' work, right? And I love his stuff about uncertainty and I totally believe it. Yet I am one of those people, I do like closure, you know, and sometimes I have to remind myself, Allison, it's like, okay, it's okay that it's uncertain. It's okay that there's tension. Right. How did you become okay with sitting in that tension?
I mean, you probably just saw me take like a big breath. It took a lot of practice.
Good, I'm not the only one.
No. It took a lot of practice, probably a lot of patience from my husband. But again, I think probably because I did the drastic move to you know, leave a secure job, a job that, you know, I was poised for growth, et cetera. It probably added the pressure to say, like, really do this. Don't just half-heartedly do this, but really do it. And again, I think having the support of coaches around me, I have a few friends who will call me on things and sort of say, hey, you're getting busy again. Back then, is this really what you wanted to be doing? It took effort. It wasn't easy. It took effort. And, you know, whether it's reminder notes around the office or around the house, probably sharing the idea with people too, because very pretty soon I was coaching people and sharing that goal with them and watching them go through their own process. You know, it helps you sort of practice it as well.
Yeah, that's good. Just being aware of it, you know, because I think that maybe I don't want to say we're programmed, but maybe conditioned. But when we feel that any kind of tension, you think, oh, there's something wrong. And sometimes, no, there's nothing wrong. It's a good tension.
Right. Sometimes the tension can be the signal that something great's about to happen.
Yeah. You know, I think about everything comes back to cross country skiing for me. It's the middle of June. It's so hot outside. It's unbelievable. And I'm already thinking about cross country skiing again, which is so, that's why I live where I live. But I think about like when I'm about to go down a new scary hill. Mm-hmm. And I am terrified. I grew up in the Midwest. It is flat in the Midwest, but it's in the pit of your stomach. It's like, you know, But when you do it, it's so exciting.
Right.
You know, mm-hmm. even if you fall, it's exciting. It's more mm-hmm. exciting if you don't fall. But so was that something that, you know, when you think about, you know, that journey to becoming the whole person, you know, that's mm-hmm. right for you. Is that one of the things about that, you know, the lofty goal and the tension, and is that part of that?
I think so. And I think it's figuring out what your lofty goal is. So everyone's lofty goal is different. And, you know, some might involve things like finances. Some might involve the ability to travel and or the ability to do meaningful work, but maybe it's a little less, or maybe it's the ability to spend time with your kids on a regular basis. It could be anything. So I think defining that lofty goal for yourself and trying to remove the expectations potentially that have been put on us by various things, right? If it's our own family, if it's society, if it's just historical expectations you've had on yourselves, that alone can be so enlightening, is even just defining that lofty goal. And then one of my most favorite things to look at and ask people is, say, you know, what are you willing to risk in this journey? And understanding that too might help you sort of guide that, because it might also tell you how important these things are. You know, in my case, I was willing to risk stability related to employment for a bit, or risk that, you know, I took the risk that was the wrong choice and I would miss that job and I'd want to go back, or something to that case, right? That's another important one. And then in terms of the whole person, I think honestly taking some time. So, you know, I referenced consulting. I really wasn't doing a lot at first, quite by design. Right after I left my job, actually, I had never really been off, certainly not when the kids were in school, not working in my adult life. And so in the first few days that my kids went to school and I wasn't working, you know, the house is reorganized, all of like a million things were happening. Community events were being planned and I was washing out a can, and I'm not much of a homemaker, and I cut my finger down to the nerve sheath.
Yeah,
it really hurt. And this is in the evening. Anyways, in the morning, I was taking my kids to school. I hadn't gone to the doctor. And I had some people in my life go, you look horrible. I think you need to go to the doctor. Turns out it was quite infected. It was silly. And the doctor looked at me and said, so, you know, as I was leaving, he's like, so what are you planning on doing today? And I said, oh, I've got this to do. And blah, blah, blah. He's like, oh, no, you're not. You're going to take these antibiotics. You're going to go home, put your hand in the air, and you're going to binge watch Netflix for the next 3 days. Like, this is how serious this is.
Oh, my goodness.
And it was again, you know, a blessing in the sense that, you know, I'd left my job, but I hadn't left my busy attitude. So it was that humility to say something needs to change here. So for the next 3 days, I watched Netflix, I called in help, other people picked up my kids. And I think taking that time to be still, all that to say, I needed, you know, severe infection in my finger to tell me that I needed to be still for a bit. And I've learned that lesson before over the years, but it's an easy one to forget. And in those moments where I've heard the voice so clearly on what that big picture goal should be, or what that lofty goal should be, it's generally in moments of stillness. So when I realized that coaching was the way, I was sitting on a deck looking out at the lake with a cup of coffee with no one around, not checking my email, not doing those things, but just being still. Which is very difficult for many people to do. And it's, you know, I'm not suggesting days on end, but having some moments of stillness where it was just me was a really important part of that journey.
Yeah.
So knowing that, I build that into my day. I get up before the whole family and coffee by myself, because I know that that's a important part of being a whole person.
Yep. Man, there's so much there. And it is funny. I heard this when I was in grad school. It was relative to coaching, that the answer is in the, or we find the answer in the silence. Mm-hmm. And I like stillness, you know, because it's true when we're when we're so busy. So I have to ask you this, just completely curious. When the doctor said, no, you're going to sit there with your finger in the air and binge watch Netflix for 3 days. Was that like a feeling of panic?
No, yeah, absolutely. I had so many things to do.
Like, no.
No, that was like ripping away a security blanket because the busyness was my badge of honor and my productivity was my badge of honor. And that probably comes back to that thought with work. You know, I valued myself on my productivity and my ability to push out a lot of work. High quality as well, but just that volume. But that didn't mean that that was my main value. And so understanding that and it was an uncomfortable thought. Probably by the third day, I was okay with it. And then it was done.
It's done
again, but
But I think you're right. I think many of us do carry that kind of like as a badge of honor. Mm-hmm. And we don't give ourselves that stillness. And like you said, it doesn't have to be days on end. Just a few minutes here and maybe a like I love going out in the summertime because we live on a lake. I go on the paddleboard and that's when it's just me, you know. Yeah. Occasionally there's a moose on the lake and then I have to navigate like getting away from that. But other than that it's just me. It's my thoughts. The dogs aren't with me. There's no responsibility. It's really nice. And I just find my mind kind of settles a little bit then. Wanted to ask you too, because I loved the question, what are you willing to risk? Mm-hmm. When you were talking about the lofty goals that people have to define those. First of all, would you explain, because I think that we might have, people have different, when they hear lofty, it's like, oh, well, does that mean noble? How do you define a lofty goal? What's that mean to you?
Yeah. So I think for me, the lofty goal is something bigger than where you are today that would bring you real meaning and satisfaction. So it's to me, it's sort of imagining if there were no restrictions, what would you want and what would you do? And everyone's sort of lofty goals will be different. Not everybody wants to be president or prime minister.
That's okay.
And for some people, it can be, you know, more giving back to society, anything along those lines. But, you know, if there were no limits, what would you want to do? To me, that's a lofty goal.
Yeah, I like that. And I like how you said it. It can be different for each and every person, right? For some people, it might be around parenting. Yeah. The other thing too is that I heard, you didn't say it quite this way, but this is what I heard is there's no shoulds.
Yeah.
Because we take those on. And you said it, sometimes we place those on ourselves and sometimes others do. And we just put it on without even thinking about it.
Yeah.
You know?
Should's a really powerful word to me. So over the years, that has been quite limiting. So it can be a trigger for me as soon as I start to hear myself say should. It's a trigger that maybe I'm not in the right frame of mind. And I think, I don't know if it was you or someone else that said it, but, you know, what if you took should out of your vocabulary? What would you say?
Yeah.
Because it is that piece of expectations, and it's normally other people's expectations if you're bringing in the word should.
Mm-hmm. And we do it, I think we do it without really thinking about it.
Uh-huh.
You know, and it's one of those things, I've had to do that for myself, like, when I hear myself saying, I should, it's like, wait.
Yeah.
Where's that coming from? You know, and what do I really mean by that word?
Yeah.
You know, is it I want to?
Yes.
Or is it you know, like sometimes I might wake up and say, oh, I should go for a paddleboard today because it's beautiful. Well, that's, I want to.
I want to. Totally.
But checking that, I think, is really important.
Yeah. Checking the shoulds. I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because again, those are those, maybe limiting, but those are those thoughts that aren't fueling us. Mm-mm. If anything, they're sort of muddying the waters, or it could be in many ways holding us back. So,
yeah. So if someone is facing one of these limiting beliefs, what could they do?
Yeah. So I think what I've found is the most important thing is identifying the limiting beliefs, right? Because you might not even realize they're there. So, if it's a constant thing you have going in your mind, or when you're thinking about possibility or those lofty goals, and there's something that's cutting it down right away that comes to mind. It's really identifying those limiting beliefs and then saying to yourself, you know, how true are they? And mm-hmm. really getting real around how valid is this? How true is it? And then another way you can look at it is, do I want to let this limit me? So I often find when I'm facing the limited belief, I actually feel like I'm up against a wall. And so it's just this me, you know, something coming at me in the wall. And so it's that idea of, what if you just step aside? So there isn't a wall behind you, but rather a pivot, and saying, is this true? Is this valid? You can ask for help to understand if it is true. So for example, if it's, you know, that could never work for my family, well, consider asking your spouse, could this work? Could this work? Right? Like, rather than just assuming that would never work. Or in the past, and when I had toddlers and things, and I would think to myself, like, oh, I could never be at school pickup and school drop off. Well, then I went and asked, and nobody cared.
Wow.
Those are very practical things, right? Like, is this a potential limiting assumption? And then digging a little bit deeper, you know, things along the lines of my only value is the volume of output, or as you said, my only value is my ability to push through things.
Yeah.
It's really sitting there and saying, is that my only value? And, you know, if in the first example of my only value is how much work I put out there, check those assumptions, ask mm-hmm. your leader, ask your colleagues, you know, what's the biggest value I bring to this team? They probably aren't going to say the volume of work. They probably won't.
Probably not.
Right. And so I think, you know, identifying them, writing them down, checking validity yourself, going to someone you trust, not anybody, but someone you trust to say, is this valid? If it's your spouse, your best friend, your sister, your brother, whatever. And then if it is a limiting belief that isn't valid, like, really know it. And then try as you might to identify when it's happening. And everybody can feel it differently. When I have a limiting belief, like I said, I feel like my back's against the wall, or I feel it mm-hmm. in my stomach, or I have a habit of, you know, different things. Maybe you have a habit of picking up your phone or something, but start to know your clues so that you can see when that limiting belief is coming into play.
Yeah, that's really good. And I think it kind of ties a little bit back to making sure we have the space, because if we're so busy all the time, we're not even going to notice it. And I think starting with that awareness, it so much starts there. So cool. So that brings up a good point when you said that they limit us, or that they're holding us back.
Yeah.
And what are some of the things that you've seen, the common things that hold mm-hmm. people back, you know, from really pursuing this journey that we could be mm-hmm. on?
I mean, I think we've started to talk about, I think it's fear. So I think it's, mm-hmm. you know, fear of the uncertainty, fear of change, you know, the unknown. I think there's the fear of, you know, if I try, so even some of our habits related to, you know, overworking, et cetera, that fear of, what if that's been the only key to my success?
Oh,
what
yeah.
if I stop doing this, I won't be able to succeed. I face that myself at periodic times in my career, where, again, thinking about the volume, well, if I drop my volume, you know, will I still be acceptable or perceived as competent in this capacity? That I find that one to be the biggest, especially with that detaching from work. And I saw yeah. more and more leaders struggling with that, especially as, you know, we were able to work remotely, or we were working with people around the world. The work never stops, because
never.
People in all different time zones are contacting us. So I think, again, sort of fear of, if I don't do this, will it hurt me, or was that the only key to my success, was because I'm responsive, or is it even possible to succeed another way? And then I think, you know, the fear of letting people down. So whether it's our families, our colleagues, our friends, if we start to change, or we start to say no to things, or we start to change, you know, approach things differently, could we potentially be letting them down?
Mm-hmm. It's hard. It's hard to think that we're going to let somebody down, you know?
Yeah.
And Allison, when you were talking there about the, is that the only key to my success or whatever?
Yeah.
Way back, I collapsed back in 2003, and it was a long journey back to health, very long journey. And I remember at one point, this was 18 months in, and I was talking to a doctor, and she's like, "Hey, I can help you. I've seen this before." And I'm like, "Terrific." And I said, "You just tell me what I need to do, because I can push through anything." And she just, like, she was writing something in the chart, and she just stopped, and she's like, "That is exactly what made you sick. Yeah. And what made you sick will not make you well."
Oh.
And I was terrified. I'm like, "But that's like my signature strength. So who am I without it?" So when you, I think that is a really big fear that we sometimes, you know, it's like, "Oh, I don't know what to do now." You know,
that gives me chills.
I was terrified. That was the scariest point in the whole journey. I'm like, "What do you mean I have to relax? I don't know what that means." You know, but yeah, so I can completely see that. Oh, I wanted to ask you too, just for some of the listeners who may not be familiar, would you explain what executive coaching is?
Sure. So executive coaching is really a collaborative process between, you know, a leader or an individual. It doesn't have to be a leader necessarily. And it's a partnership really between a coach and the coachee, as we could say. It's very personalized. It looks at understanding a person's strengths, preferences, potentially limiting beliefs, et cetera, all with the goal, forward momentum, as I like to put it. So, you know, working together, you set sort of a long-term goal for your time together, or a vision, if you will. And then each session you dig into various pieces of it. It can be guided. There can be activities you do together, for example, around personal visioning, values, energy sources. But what's really powerful about executive coaching, I find, is it's very much tailored to the person. So you go where the person is, and you go where the person wants to go. It's also not an intensive 3-day class where you learn and then you go away and you apply, which there is a wonderful place for that too. What's different with executive coaching is it's periodic. So you have the opportunity to try out these various things and then connect again with your coach, et cetera. So it really is a powerful learning experience that really is personalized to the person. So I don't know, would you add anything to that?
I think you said that pretty well.
Okay.
You know, no, yeah. I think it's a great way to think about it. And that relationship between the two people.
Yeah.
It's so important. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just so powerful.
Well, and I think another piece that I didn't highlight is really that the confidential sounding board piece, right? So in particular with leaders, so I find either new in positions or have been at the top, for lack of a better word, for a long time, there's that idea that you feel as though you need to be the best at everything and you don't want to admit gaps or challenges with anybody. So the opportunity to have a confidential person to have sounding board with, or to, you know, have them challenge you, you know, safely on assumptions or plans can be really valuable, I find, in particular to leaders. So I've also been working with a number of young people, sort of 20s, as a throwback to my own experience. And having an adult, which is funny to call myself that, but having an adult that isn't a parent or a teacher or a coach or like a sports coach, but someone for them to work with and to be sort of shepherded through this journey of self-understanding has been really powerful for them as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and that's so rewarding, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Neat. Now, are those, I'm just kind of curious, is that through like an organization? Is it volunteer? What is that?
Yeah, not yet. Nope. So it's mainly just through my network, to be honest. So it's been a variety of sort of, I think my youngest is 19 and struggling to determine exactly where they want to go in university. A couple other are just coming out of university and deciding what that next career step could be. One is has identified their career path, but how do we get them over the barriers to get them there? And what's really neat is to see these young people willing to sort of self-reflect. And we do activities with a personality tool called Lumina, but willing to self-reflect and say, okay, what are my strengths? What are my potential blind spots? And how can that inform these big choices ahead of me?
Yeah.
So I can feel confident in them. And they're really open and curious. And I'm excited for them because they're going to have the starting point as they, you know, really start those careers and kicking things off. Yeah.
Gosh. And there's so much pressure. I mean, I don't know how it is in Canada. There's so much, it seems like there's so much pressure on young people though. Like, okay, you're 18 or I was doing a leadership retreat for high school kids. This was years ago. So I don't even know how you know, it's probably worse now. And they were saying that as early as seventh or eighth grade, there was that pressure to say, what do I want to do with the rest of my life? You don't even know what, how, that's just a big question.
It's a lot. Yeah. And I hear them say, you know, I'm about to spend a lot on my education, or my parents are, I've got to get this right. So you can hear the pressure.
Yeah.
And they don't necessarily know who to talk to about that because they don't want to let anybody down. So it's a really neat entry point. And I've often said, I wish I'd had coaching before I went to school. I think I would have made better choices. I love the idea of expanding that just because you see these, I mean, anyone you get to coach, you see them, you see their energy go up and their confidence and their conviction for where they want to go increase. And
it's so powerful. It's one of those things that when you coach someone, I think you get a lot out of it.
Oh yeah.
You know,
I agree.
It's just a powerful place. So, and I love that you're doing that. So that's cool. And I'm watching the time. And it's gone by. This has been great. There's so much more we could dive into, but I want to give you time. How can people like find out more about what you're doing and that type of thing?
Oh, thanks, Bobby. So my company's name is Ripple Solutions. I'm located on the West Coast of Canada, but of course, in the world we're living in now of Zoom, et cetera, I'm lucky to connect with people all over the world. My website is ripplesolutions.ca. And then you can find me, Allison Napier, on LinkedIn as well. And my focus is really, you know, we've talked about it, coaching. So working with leaders, that's the executive coaching space. I have another avenue sort of focused on clarity. So oftentimes that's individuals facing either times of change or critical decisions or not quite sure what that next phase of life is, where they want to go. So not necessarily in leadership positions. And then the third bucket is that younger group. So helping them have some clarity in terms of whether it's school or career or anything along those lines. So
that's
that
awesome.
One's not on the website yet, but it's coming.
Yeah. That is so cool. And I'll put all those links in the show notes that people can easily find you. Yeah. And I just wanted to, you know, thank you for taking the time to be here. And it was great to reconnect after, it doesn't seem like it's been a few years, but I guess it has been. So thanks for being here today.
Thank you. And I just have to say thank you to you as well, Bobby. So we talked about my own journey, but you played a critical role in it. And I know that many people would benefit from working with you. So I wish you all the best. And I'm so grateful. So thank you.
You were a joy to work with. So you made it easy.
Awesome. Well, you have a great afternoon.
Okay. You too.
Thanks, Bobby.
I hope that you found not just inspiration in that conversation, but also some really practical tools that you can apply. Here are my three insights for thriving. Number one, something that really resonated for me was when Allison said that the cost of not changing just became too much, too high. I think that we can all probably relate to that. I know that I can personally, as well as having seen it show up in coaching. You know, sometimes that pain, that cost, becomes the catalyst for change. Number two, I really loved the word picture of the rubber band spread over the thumb and the forefinger, with the forefinger being on the top and representing our lofty goal. However, we authentically define that for ourselves, free of shoulds, free of oughts. It's got to be true for us. And then the rubber band is also hooked under the bottom of our thumb, and that represents our current state. And here's the thing. Our current state is simply our current state. It's not our future, and it's not set in stone. And then the space between our current state, our thumb, and our lofty goal, our forefinger, creates a tension. The bigger that gap is, the more tension we have. And that tension can feel uncomfortable. So to reduce the tension, we have two options. One, we can lower our goal, or we can raise our current state. In coaching people, I've noticed that because that tension can feel so uncomfortable, it's tempting to give in to lowering our lofty goals. But remember, it is simply an uncomfortable feeling. It's just discomfort, which leads me to my third insight. Sit in the tension, as Allison described doing for herself. Don't lower your goals, not when they're true for you. You know, give yourself the grace and the margin and the permission to sit in that uncomfortable space, because you will grow through it. As always, I want to thank you for tuning in and for listening to the podcast. I hope that you're finding a ton of value as well as inspiration in the episodes. If you are, I hope that you have subscribed and have maybe even shared it with a friend, a family member, or a colleague who might benefit from the message that we are sending. Because our mission here at Unyielded is to provide hope, knowledge, and assurance that we can all thrive and flourish if we choose. And by subscribing and sharing the podcast, you are helping us spread that message of hope.